and welcome to the co-op. It's Rebecca Bratton Weiss here with co-host Matthew Tyson. And as usual, we're ready to rant about all manner of things pertaining to life ethics. It's what we do.
It's been a day.
So, yeah. But it always is now.
Yeah.
It's like every day we're like, whoa. This is in the news. Oh, are we done being angry yet? No, we're not.
Not quite.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm located in eastern Ohio, where we have any number of interesting things, including far-right Catholics. We have beard-cutting Amish cults. We have people who collect large numbers of exotic animals, and we also have a lot of coal mining. My region 100 years ago was almost entirely agricultural, and I think 70% of what used to be farmland was ultimately in some way mined, whether it was strip mining or underground mining. All of these then, of course, create a huge amount of toxic runoff. You can see it. I used to go horseback riding a lot in what we call the spoil banks. The spoil banks are basically, back before the companies were required to reclaim the land, they would just go in and just blow shit up and make big piles, take the coal, get rich, and leave. And then these huge heaps of dirt and rocks are sitting there, and trees grow on them, and eventually you've got like kind of a cool little weird mountain range, but nothing can grow there, and you can't graze animals there even really. So that's the legacy of coal mining in this region, and we now have fracking, which people say is much better and much cleaner. And recently, we had pretty tight restrictions on mining companies having to at least sort of pretend to clean up their messes. I will say this, though, reclaimed land is not the same as untouched land, because topsoil is not just a thing. It's like an ecosystem, and once you've disrupted it, you can't just like take a whole bunch of dirt and just kind of dump it down over top of reclaimed land and expect that it's going to be the same, especially if there's like toxic sludge hiding underneath the dirt, which there probably is.
Probably.
So anyway, my thing that I got angry about today was the thing about the EPA no longer requiring the mining companies to have funds to reclaim and clean it up after they've come in and made a mess of the land. And you saw that piece too, didn't you?
I did. And it plays into this weird, I mean, the conservative side and the Republicans, they get into some like really weird stuff regarding like things they're opposed to. And it's interesting to watch some of these, some of these basic fundamental things that you think shouldn't be partisan issues get turned into partisan issues, like education, you know, for example.
Right.
You know, suddenly we've got this group of people who just have this huge issue with public education and academia in general. It becomes this liberal thing. Well, you know, environmentalism is one of those things that has become this liberal idea. And you know, I guess if you, I mean, if you, the real core of it is that, you know, you have the Republicans usually tend to be a little bit more hard on the capitalism than people. The Democrats are too.
Right.
We are a capitalist nation through and through. Even our left-wing party is a capitalist party. But the Republicans are much more willing to destroy the planet in the name of money and capitalism. And this is another one of those weird things that, like, The Republicans have this, like, hardcore, like, just hard-on for just going after anything related to climate change, global warming, or environmentalism in general.
Mm-hmm.
Regulating what companies can do, how much they can pollute, you know, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. It's anti-business, and we're so much more pro-business than we are, like, you know, the environment, taking care of, like, the earth and the ground that we live on. And so, you know, this is just another, you know, step in that direction. I think that the excuse given was that it was pointless, and that it was this unneeded burden on the companies, and then it hurt. And then, of course, it always comes back to that, you know.
poor little companies.
Right.
They're suffering so much.
All this, you know, protecting the planet is bad for capitalism, and so, you know, it hurts business. And never do we stop and think, well, maybe we should do a different business. Like, at least, at the very least, maybe we should say,
right,
hey, you know, we like this capitalism thing, but what we're doing right now is destroying the planet. So maybe we could find a different form of energy to sell to people. I would accept that a little bit more.
Right.
Honestly. But,
It's
ridiculous to me that they have this just insane drive to destroy not just all things Obama, but all things in you know, environmental. It's this weird target that so many in the GOP have gone after. I think it's probably, and of course it has a lot to do with talk about climate change and global warming, which, you know, mm-hmm. Republicans in large numbers consider to be a giant hoax, which also doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I guess when you've demonized the entire concept of science as a liberal conspiracy, I guess it gets pretty easy to shut it down. But you know, it's a big issue, and it's one of those things. Environmentalism, just in general, and our anger at this is one of those things that people don't really consider to be much of a life ethics issue, but we very much see it as a life ethics issue, because when you disrupt the environment to such a degree that nothing can grow, or that you displace a whole bunch of people, or that you go in and destroy the land and then move all of your businesses off to China and then leave a bunch of people with no jobs and no resources and hardly any land they can even grow anything on. When you start to realize like the consequences that these capital first, business first policies that the Republicans love so much, these aren't things that are just going after these, you know, the environment, which I think we think is an easy target because it's the environment, you know, it's not a lie, but we consider this an inanimate object. It's just grass, it's just dirt, it's just trees, whatever. But when you start to attack the environment this way, you actually really start to affect human beings' lives, and very quickly.
Exactly.
And it's very hard to be pro-life when you don't have a planet to live on in the first place. And even as Christians, and this is, you know, I kind of, you know, tie this back to, you know, Pope Francis's talk about climate change and caring for the environment, and he approaches it in this very spiritual Christian manner, tying it back to scripture and Christianity and the faith, and talking about how, you know, God created the world not as something for us to exploit, but as something for us to, you know, utilize. God gave us an earth that, you know, we can grow food. We can build homes and out of materials that come out of the earth. But there has to be a limit. We have to realize that this bountiful gift that we've been given is something that we're supposed to care for. It really does strike me as odd, especially in the... Well, it strikes me as odd. It strikes my sensible self as odd. It strikes my cynical self as par for the course, because you have a lot of right-wing Christians who put their politics before their faith. But it does strike my sensible side as odd that Christians would be so... or at least so many Christians, especially those who follow the right side of the spectrum, would be so... deliberate in their attempts to put things like capital above the good of the environment, and their insistence on ignoring the kind of impacts that these non-environmental friendly business practices have on people's lives. And then again, if you just think of the fact that if this is a creation of God, if the world that we live on is not by accident, but is something that, just as the rest of us are, was created from God and is blessed with God's dignity and his love, it's interesting to me that Christians would be so willing to just toss it aside. So willing to just in the name of capital, in the name of business, in the name of Americanism, whatever, would be so willing to do things that are so deliberate to hurt the earth. And of course, people will come back and say, well, you know, you have all these regulations and it can hurt business and it cuts into profits and blah, 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 blah. And of course, those arguments, you know, here, especially at least with this radio show, arguments about, you know, doing things for the environment hurts business, or that raising wages hurts business, or that, you know, anything that brings any kind of justice to people, to laborers, to the environment, I don't give really two shits if it hurts business or not. There are some things that are more important than business and capital. There are some things that we have to take. It's called priorities. You know, people's lives, people's well-being, the world that we live on are way more important than, you know, than paying out your shareholders or making a quick buck. So that never really works with us to begin with.
No, and it's funny because people are always like, oh, well, you know, we've never had unregulated capitalism. And I'm like, yes, we have. And if you studied 19th century literature, you would see just how awesome it was, mm-hmm. because it was a time in which people were dying in factories and had no recourse to any kind of health care, any mm-hmm. kind of assistance. And then when they tried to, you know, kind of march up to the factory owners and the business owners to say, we are dying here, they called out the army to shoot at them. Oh, that was what it was like when the capitalists could do whatever the hell they wanted. And I feel like I'm kind of seeing a return to that. And what blows my mind is that these people are still pretending to be pro-life, because, like, there's two huge problems there. First of all, like you said, in the creation story and the way Pope Francis talks about it, we are reminded that creation is good. And God didn't say, oh, this is good, this is going to be super useful for human beings. And he certainly didn't say, this is going to be really super useful for paunchy old white lecherous guys to make more money so they can add more to their wine collection and have a fancier mistress.
Right.
You know, 19th century shit. He said good. That means good in itself. And so we need to, I think, approach creation with reverence. And I don't just mean the parts of creation that we happen to be personally fond of, like pretty flowers and cute fluffy puppies. I'm talking also about snakes and spiders. I'm talking about these microorganisms that are actually part of us. We are made up of microorganisms. So, you know, you might think that that's gross, but that's actually how we survive. It's how we digest. It's how we live. And I think that you can either, when you confront that, you either freak out and you're like, oh my God, I'd rather be a robot, or you have to say, well, I'm connected with a great many living things mm-hmm. that I didn't know about, and that's humbling that we are part of the environment. And that's where the other part of the, like, how is this pro-life thing comes up, because if we're destroying the environment, we're destroying something that we need for survival, and mm-hmm. maybe we don't need it just yet, but our children will and our grandchildren will. And if it's all about reproduction, like I'm always told as a woman, the primary job for my sexuality is to reproduce. And I want to know, you know, if I have the 9, 10, 11 kids I'm supposed to have had at this point by my age, 43, what are they going to live on? What's going to happen if all of the energy sources have been depleted, all the topsoil has been destroyed? You know, luckily, we are clearing up a lot of air pollution in the United mm-hmm. States. That's been a huge thing. And it's because we paid attention to what the environmentalists said. And that's something that drives me crazy, and I want to rant about briefly, which is that people are like, oh, well, back in the 60s and 70s, people were saying all this doom and gloom stuff, and it didn't happen. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. It didn't happen because we listened to them, because we banned certain substances, because we thought, oh, look, people in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania can't breathe. Maybe that's not great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like we did a few good things. Let's do more good things. I think we could learn a lot of lessons from Europe and like England. They don't have a whole lot of sunlight there. But when you drive along through northern England, you know, bleak northern England, where you, like, put on a cloak and you rush off into the moors and you die in the rain, they have solar panels all over the place, and they have wind farms, and they're not unattractive. They're actually quite pretty. They're a lot prettier than the strip mine areas of West Virginia. So I feel like all of the arguments that people are making against alternative forms of energy are kind of self-defeating. People are making it work. They're making it work in England, and they're making it look pretty. So why can't we do that also?
Well, it's definitely got to do with it comes down to how we put our politics before everything. And we talk about that a lot, and I'm sure that, you know, I know that I'm guilty of doing the same thing in a lot of times. But again, it is weird. Like, I kind of go back to what I said earlier, like the fact that we should, like, hey, maybe we should be conscious of how these practices are hurting the environment. Well, we think that is a weird liberal idea. Like, that's what kills me. It's weird to me that it's not, like, a commonly shared. So many things that I believe in that are these weird liberal ideas are things that I don't feel like should be liberal ideas, though. I don't think they should be left-wing ideas. I feel like they should just
be just ordinary thoughts. Common sense.
I'm even willing to happily concede to the idea that, at least in some form, the free market is really good for a society. You know, that when people are allowed to go into business for themselves, and when they're allowed to, you know, work their own land and sell their own stuff, that, like, there's a lot of good in the concept of the free market. But just because there's good in that concept doesn't mean that it can't be, regulated. And it's so, and you know, something that you mentioned earlier about, you know, unrestrained capitalism in the 19th century, and kind of how you're seeing a return of that today in so much of what we're seeing. It's always been interesting to me, because I have this, the thing that I always bring up when I talk about things like labor rights and like labor unions with my Republican friends or conservative family or whatever is that, and they'll even agree to this point, is that if business owners treated all their employees like people, if they paid them a fair wage, if they gave them benefits, if they said, hey, thank you honestly for showing up every single day, you know, and doing a great job, if they, instead of, you know, in some of these bigger employers, instead of, you know, maybe instead of taking home $20 million, they took home $15 million and put some of that money back in the business, if they treated their employees like people, like human beings, gave them just wages, and just did the thing they're supposed to do up front, you'd never have issues with labor unions. You'd never have issues with socialism and communism. If people just did decent shit to begin with, we wouldn't have things like Marxism. Because you talk about this unrestrained capitalism, and you have to understand that obviously, you know, we've had political theory that you can date back for, you know, centuries and centuries, but by and large, the labor movement and the concepts of socialism and communism came out as, like, almost as in, like, a reaction to these issues with the capitalist society, with labor. You know, if that didn't happen, you wouldn't be fighting against socialism. You wouldn't be fearing the concept of socialism and communism. If you just did decent shit, you wouldn't have to deal with this in the first place. And that's another concept that always throws my mind off, is that people spend, especially in this country, we spend so much time, Republicans, many Democrats too, we spend so much time fighting labor unions, fighting people's rights, fighting labor rights, fighting the call for hiring. We spend all this time fighting all this stuff tooth and nail, when if you just took the bullet and paid people a fair wage in the first place, you'd probably still be just as profitable at this point. You'd probably have just as much money. You'd have just as many private jets and homes or whatever. I mean, you'd still be doing it, even if you're a small business owner. I mean, and don't get me wrong, when you get into small business, things are a little bit different. But, you know, if people just did this stuff up front, if people just were decent up front, then we wouldn't have a lot of these issues. And that goes back to sort of the issues with you know, environmentalism in the first place. If we just had a little bit of forethought and said, maybe we shouldn't just destroy the planet, maybe we should think about what these things you know, could possibly do to not just the environment, but to the people who live in this environment and the people who depend on this environment. If we had just sort of thought about those things again, you wouldn't be dealing with the government trying to tax and cap carbon emissions. You wouldn't be dealing with right. issues of being forced to pay out a certain amount of money for cleanup. If you were again, I go back to the same thing I just said. If you were doing decent shit to begin with, you wouldn't have to have half of these problems. And of course, hindsight is 20/20, but it still blows my mind that people can't just wrap their head around the fact that, like, so many of the problems that we're dealing with are born out of our own greed. Like, so many of the problems that we deal with in this country are born out of the fact that we decide that we put our capital and our money and our things and our interests over the good of our fellow man, over the environment, over the unborn, over people of color, over our laborers. Like, we put all this over everything, and it's funny because in our own faith, in the Christian faith, as Catholics, as Christians in general, we're warned about these kind of things. We're warned, like, what kind of issues yeah. greed can lead to, and the love of money can lead to, and all these problems. We're warned about all this kind of stuff. You would think that if people just tried to be, I mean, really, if you want to go back and forth, people actually be a little bit more focused on the good, the social good, the environmental good. Half the problems we're dealing with now wouldn't even be problems.
Yeah, yeah. And what I found fascinating is that for many years I had this kind of idea that, like, the people on the right were all about this unregulated freedom when it comes to the market, and the people on the left were all about this unregulated freedom when it comes to sexuality. And I believe me, I'm all about freedom. I just regard it somewhat differently from the way yeah. others do. I think that responsible freedom means acting in a way that allows your freedom itself to flourish, so that you're not having to kind of make yourself smaller, cut off more options. I don't really even like the idea that freedom is the freedom to do the right thing, because that sounds really manipulative. Mm-hmm. I feel that freedom is the freedom to flourish as a human being, and flourishing as a human being means becoming more free, not less free. And so, you know, within those parameters, I thought it was kind of weird that you've got these two different sides, where on one side there's this irresponsible freedom about sexuality, and then on the other side an irresponsible freedom about the market, where you just kind of are like, oh, I want that, bleh, and then just, like, blunder into it, grab it, bite it, chew it, and then afterwards you're like, oh, shit, what'd I do? But what I'm seeing now is that the right has managed, you know, congratulations, right-wingers, you've managed to achieve irresponsible use of freedom in both of these areas. Mm-hmm. Because the left, there can be plenty of disagreements on sexual ethics, but I feel that the left in general kind of has a better grasp on sexual ethics than the right does. Because they do heavily emphasize things like consent, and mm-hmm. they do emphasize the importance of, like, mutuality. And I feel like coming from the right now, all I'm getting is, well, you know, as long as you're not gay.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, or
teenage
yeah,
girls,
like,
are more
whatever
pure,
you do is fine,
so
as long as you're not gay. Yeah, teenage girls are pretty, so, you know, assaulting them is a form of respecting their beauty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, this, I wonder if this rampant moral irresponsibility in regards to the environment actually leads to a rampant moral irresponsibility as regards everything else, because you're looking at living beings that can't talk back to you. Like, a little bunny rabbit can't say, oh, you're destroying our ecosystem. I use right. bunny rabbit because they're cute. But neither can a microbe, and neither can an earthworm, and they can't speak to you, which is actually remarkably similar to the unborn child who can't speak to you. Mm-hmm. But the difference between the capitalist kind of robber baron who doesn't care, and the difference between a woman who chooses abortion, is that the capitalist robber baron has many other options. He's got so much power, he's got so much money, he doesn't have to destroy. Women who choose abortion are in a position where they are kind of down to their last thread.
It's a bit reluctant.
Last straw. And so, this is not a situation where they're like, oh, I don't care. Men, in many cases, they care quite a bit. But for this, the kind of capitalist exploiter of the environment, he's gotten to ignoring things that can't obviously grab him and say, you know, don't do this to me. Who can't say, oh, I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. And so the environment, in a way, the ecosystem, the earth, much of nature is silent until we learn how to listen to it properly. And those who haven't learned how to listen to it properly then perhaps lose their ability to listen to anything. Kind of Dante talks about the loss of the good of the intellect, meaning that sin makes you stupid. But shorthand. I feel like that's kind of what I'm seeing here with this capitalist rape of the environment.
Well, we have to think about destroying the environment as sin, too. Like, we don't think about it as a sin. And that's probably a big issue with Christianity. Is that, and I don't even want to say it's an issue with Christianity. I want to say that's an issue with modern Christianity. See, one of the reasons that I cling so closely to Catholicism, even though I'm super duper bad at it, is that the social justice, the belief in social justice, the Catholic social teaching, in Catholicism is so closely tied in with sort of the classical Christian concept of in different moralities and the concept of God, and it just there's this, like I said, we don't think about. And in modern Christianity, we think about sin as being something based strictly off of sort of this written set of rules. Anything that doesn't go sort of like pull specifically, literally into this written set of rules, then we're not. Then obviously, it's okay. And again, one of the reasons, big reasons I embrace Catholicism is because Catholicism embraces a larger, broader idea, or at least in on the books, it really, you know, it embraces this larger, broader idea of the good and morality. And you could probably follow this, and I don't want to follow this too deep tonight because I don't think we have enough time to do it, but I would want to even follow that there's some like theological barriers to like the concept of like sola scriptura could possibly lead some one to these concepts of the environment doesn't matter and things of that nature, because if you believe that everything that the entire concept of your faith is based literally off of what is in the Bible, and you can't find literally in the Bible where it says, hey, don't destroy the world, then your morality is going to be warped from day one based off, you know, when it comes to the environment. And I think that's why, you know, when I find myself arguing with like Republicans regarding like the environment, regarding labor and all these other issues. And I have to stop usually halfway through the thing and say, oh, hey, hold on. I'm actually not arguing from a liberal perspective. I'm arguing from a Catholic perspective. I'm actually not arguing with you as a Democrat or as a leftist. I'm arguing with you as a Catholic. But I think that's something important that we have to do, and kind of bring it a little bit full circle, is that we have to embrace this larger idea of morality, this larger idea of what is ethical, and what is the good, and that I think that necessarily needs to include the environment, because of it is part of God's creation. It is good. You know, we talk about the reason that we're pro-life is because existence, humanity, being alive, the right to life, is intrinsically good, and that we shouldn't destroy that. I mean, the exact, like I said at the beginning of the show, the exact same goodness is found, you know, in the environment. The exact same goodness is found in the same places, too. And so we have to, I think Christians have a duty. I think we really, truly have a obligation and a duty to do our best to, in whether in a small way or a large way, care for the environment. And on that note, Rebecca, to kind of like take things out here tonight and end things, I do want to talk, I want to mention something, and I want to get your thoughts on this, but I want to mention something about that. So this idea that whether it is, you know, how we treat the poor, or how we maybe even possibly care for the environment, or how we express the moral, spiritual, and ethical commands that Christ gave to us. There's this idea among the right wing and right wing Christians that when Jesus said care for the least of these, he didn't mean the government. He didn't mean that you're supposed to tell the government to do these things. He meant you're supposed to do these things specifically. And this is usually used as a cop-out for to excuse the passage of blatantly immoral legislation. And so I think that's something that we have to think about too, because I was talking about this with someone, last night as well. Why can't it be, it needs to be, I think as the Christian, and especially in American society, it needs to be a both and situation. So yes, you absolutely need to do things, personal actions, everyday life that, you know, at least find somewhere one of the two contribute and care for the least of these. Whether it's as simple as just being mindful of your own waste and your own privilege and the things you're doing in your life, at the very, very least, if you can't go out every day and give money or do something, at the very least, you could at least be mindful of the fact that you are more privileged than many people in the world, and then utilize the things in your life and in your surroundings to that degree. Don't throw away food, you know, don't throw away things, give them away, you know, try to reuse as much as you can, things of that nature. But at the same time, while we do absolutely need to do these personal actions where we care for the least of these, I think that also has to translate into how we vote and govern, because all these decisions are still going to affect society. And just because it is the government doing it is not an excuse for us to ignore the commands of Christ. And so it is equally immoral for a government, for people in a political party, to pass legislation that goes against the good. And yes, that goes for the Democrats too. All this abortion legislation, even though we disagree on the concept of how the best to fight abortion, yes, at the end of the day, voting in favor of particular pro-abortion legislation is also wrong, is also not protecting the least of these. But so is raising taxes on the middle class, or so is like taking people's health care away. All these things that the Republicans do and the right wing does in the name of, you know, conservatism and capitalism and Americanism and Republicanism, that they're able to say, oh, well, that's Jesus wasn't talking about the government. It didn't apply to the government. Can basically do whatever it wants. It's not the government's job to care for people. Well, yes, it kind of is. It is the government's job to care for the common good. And if we're going to be Christians in a society, if we're truly going to live by by the call that Christ gave us to care for the least of these, and that has to translate not just to our personal actions, but to our public actions as well. And the same goes for the environment. We need to do things to care for the environment in our own time, but we also are going to have to answer, I think, as politicians who cast a vote for anti-environment legislation, or for us if we vote for people who, you know, we know are 100% in favor of destroying the planet. All of these public action, these votes, these legislations, these things need to be considered in the spectrum of Christian morality as well. I think we're going to have to answer for all of it at the end of it all. And I think that it needs to be a both-and situation, both in public and private life. We have to live the gospel. Jesus Christ never said, and he didn't put restrictions on how we're supposed to care for the least of these. You know, none of the commands, he didn't say, we'll do this or do that. He just said, this is what you're supposed to do. And he left the means up to us. And if I'm a betting man, then I'm going to put my money on doing as much of that as I can in every situation that I can, including public, political, and government life. That's all I got for the night. That's I'm done.
Jesus also didn't say that cathedrals and monasteries were supposed to take care of the poor, because cathedrals and monasteries didn't exist yet, and yet at the time of the Middle Ages, they were the ones who were largely responsible for what we would now call social justice. So my view is, you know, use what you've got given where you are right now.
Absolutely.
The poor can't wait until we've restructured society to create some kind of distributist paradise 50 years from now. The poor need to be fed this minute. Families need health care this minute. So it's not that government is the ideal way to do it. It's what can we use given our present situation. And so in our present situation, you might go and donate $50 worth of diapers to Crisis Pregnancy Center, but then if you turn around and vote to have people's health care taken away and families to have strip mining in their own backyards and people to lose access to food stamps, then I would have to say that, you know, your little act of charity was very sweet, but you need to think pretty seriously about the broader effects of your actions. And maybe you're stupid, and so you'll get off on stupidity. But if you're not stupid and you make decisions like that, then Jesus did have some pretty harsh stuff to say. That's where my Catholic guilt is. I don't have Catholic guilt about, like, sex stuff. I have Catholic guilt because I'm like, I should probably give more money to the poor, even though I'm technically still kind of on the cusp of low income. So yeah, I mean, like you said, we should at least be mindful of it.
Well, Jesus didn't talk about, you know, when we talk about getting to heaven, Jesus didn't say, well, if you went to Mass every week, which you should.
Right.
And if you didn't, you know, if you didn't go to confession all the time, which if you can, you should. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you should do these things. If you're Catholic, you should be at Mass. You should go to confession. You should do everything you can to follow the teaching of the church. But when Jesus Christ talked about what it was that your salvation was going to be judged on, it wasn't any of that stuff. It wasn't how closely you defended Humani Vitae. What really mattered was how treated the least of these. He's very explicit about that.
Yep.
Very explicit about that. That's all the time we got for tonight. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. It's been a fun rant. It's been an enjoyable night. Please, whatever you can do. I want to leave the show tonight by saying whatever you can do to protect the environment in your area, whether that is just recycling, not using Keurig, maybe you can, if you have like a local, like we have a lot of creeks in a river system in Alabama that people like to canoe down and go kayaking, maybe put together like a kayaking trip where you all go and clean up trash, maybe just volunteer to clean up trash in your neighborhood, something, anything you can do to impact the environment in your area, please consider taking at least a Saturday out of the month, once a month, and doing something to volunteer in your local community for the environment, because that's at the end of the day, the community is where all this stuff really starts. That's where things grow out of. So please consider trying to do something for your local environment and do something for the good of God's creation and for this wonderful plant that we have, and help us try to protect it. So that's my PBS sign off for tonight, I guess. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.